This episode of Voices of the Elephant is sponsored by Day Camp for Developers. Listen for a special offer at the end of this podcast. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi there, and welcome to the first live recording of Voices of the Elephant. This one's a little bit different from my normal format in that I don't have three standard questions that I'm going to ask each of these gentlemen. We have two guests with us, and we're going to have a discussion. Guest number one is Brandon Savage, and Brandon is the one that started the conversation when he posted on his blog post. And for those of you listening live, I've pasted the link to the blog post in the chat. And for those of you who are listening later on, I've put the blog post in the show notes. The other gentleman is Scott Gordon. Those of you who have heard podcasts from me before have heard me and Scott talk about recruiters and about jobs and about all kind of fun stuff. And Scott's just one of the people here in Nashville that if you're doing any technology at all, you know Scott. If you don't, you're probably not really doing technology, so or at least you're doing it wrong. So those are my two guests. We've got Brandon, who doesn't appreciate the value of recruiters, and we've got Scott, who is a recruiter but can see some of that value. So I promised each of them an introduction, so I'm going to let Brandon kick off first, and when Brandon's done, then Scott, you'll have your turn to start talking. Now, I will say this, audience members, if you have questions, please feel free to write your questions in the question box, and I'll stop the at the appropriate points in the discussion. I'll stop and read them to our panelists for them to discuss. So, Brandon, go ahead.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Cal. Thanks to you and both Voices of the Elephant for agreeing to moderate this discussion tonight. This discussion, obviously, as you said, stems from a blog post that I wrote about recruiters called Why Recruiters Are Bad for Your Career. And the entry was generally well received by the community, and I got a lot of comments about it. And it was pretty panned by professional recruiters for the obvious reasons. It highlights the ways in which recruiters tend to lie, cheat, and deceive well-meaning and often unemployed developers in their quest for meaningful employment. I intend to talk mostly tonight from my own personal experience with recruiters and the experiences that I've had looking for work. These experiences have been echoed by my friends and colleagues, and I believe they're largely representative of exactly what we as developers are facing while we're looking for jobs. In a way, Scott, you have the harder task here tonight, because there are few professions that are performed with the level of deception common to technology recruiting. When most people go to buy a used car, they expect to get screwed, but recruiters try to play off the hopes and dreams and oftentimes desperations of developers, and often to that developer's detriment. I'd like to have an example here, a story of sorts. I've gotten a lot of emails about this blog post. Obviously, some of them came from recruiters. And the interesting ones seem to have seen my blog post as an avenue for expressing to me, quote, how sorry they are for my experiences, and then to say that I'm a different kind of recruiter. And then they usually post some kind of a job posting, often for a Java or .NET job, which only proves to me that they didn't bother to read my resume, and they're the same as all the others. The one that sticks out, though, in my mind came just last week from a recruiter who will remain nameless, who stated that he had just read my blog post and said he didn't generally like recruiters, and then told me that he had placed the vice president of engineering at the company I was working for, and then proceeded to attach a job posting advertising a role elsewhere, telling me he thought I'd be a good fit for it. So after getting paid what I can only imagine was a huge commission for placing my boss, he was willing to screw my boss by stealing his employees. And that to me is just sad, and sad is really the state I would describe the state of recruiters, at least from the perspective of developers. So I'm looking forward to this discussion tonight. Thanks, Kel.
Thanks, Brandon. Okay, Scott, you want to give us an intro?
Absolutely. Cal, again, thank you as well for Voices of the Elephant being able to host this chat tonight, and thank you, Cal, specifically for moderating it. I had the opportunity to read the post and agree with some points and obviously disagree with some points. It's sad that in the 12, 13 plus years that I've been in this industry, that I've spent the majority of the last 8 or 9 years defending my own profession. The profession itself, yeah, you're right, it does have, with a turnover rate of 70% in the first year, meaning that 7 out of the 10 headhunters you meet are going to quit within the first year. It's not surprising to me that that there tends to be sort of that bad look and feel. I think it all comes down to training in the beginning and also the level of passion in which someone does their job for their particular company. There are some very good recruiters, and I think that they're very ethical recruiters, but I think in the same breath there are probably more that come from that true pimp, headhunter, handler, broker that has their quote-unquote stable of developers. The fact that someone replied to your blog and then tried to recruit you out of it is just poor training on their part. That's a very common tactic that I think some people use, and everybody of course wants to be different. I can tell you from multiple years in the industry, I can count the recruiters that I actually respect and enjoy and would actually refer somebody to you on one hand. That says a lot about our own industry. I actually enjoy what I do, enjoy the company I work for, and can still defend it and sleep well at night. So I look forward to this conversation. It should be fun.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, I have prepared some questions, and you two have had the questions for a couple days now. I think I sent them out Friday. These were basically the starter questions. If the audience members give us some questions, I'll obviously deviate from the plan, but otherwise we will go through the questions as I presented them. Now, this is not a debate. This is more of a conversation, so I'm going to throw the question out there. I've given each of you some hints as to, you know, what I'm looking for, but feel free to go off script. I mean, we've got 5 questions and roughly an hour, or we could look at it. We've got 5 questions and 3 gigabytes of hard drive left, so either way you look at it, you know. I want the discussion to continue, like any of my Voices of the Elephant, I want the discussion to continue until everybody's been heard. So with that having been said, I'm going to throw the first question out, is how do recruiters find developers? And Brandon, you've talked about some unsolicited contacts. And Scott, I want you to show us the other side of it and tell us, you know, how you find these and maybe explain why some of them might come across as unsolicited contacts.
Sure.
Brandon, you want to lead us off?
Sure. I'm very interested in Scott's take on how developers are found. I know from my perspective, there's not a week that doesn't go by where my phone will ring, and because I use a Google Voice number for my online phone number, the one that I publish, I know instantaneously what kind of a call I'm getting when Google Voice, you know, alerts me that they're the ones that are calling. And it never fails that every week I get a call from at least one recruiter, and some of the worst experiences that I've had were recruiters who called me 2 or 3 times a day, sometimes even different recruiters at the same company who didn't know that they were looking at the same person, which was a little funny to me. But you know, one of the more frustrating things as a developer is to get those calls, especially when you're at work or when you have an advertised that you're even looking for a job. And they're always, you know, they're very similar. They're very much the same kind of calls. You know, I saw your resume online and I thought you'd be great for this position. And sometimes they don't even tell you what the position is. And so as a developer, it's frustrating to get these calls that sugarcoat the you know, from the recruiter, the job posting, and they try and make you feel good, but you know, there's really not a whole lot of substance to it. And that's been my experience, is that every week I'm getting these calls. I wish they'd stop, to be perfectly honest. You know, I don't know how recruiters are finding my resume. Maybe, Scott, you can shed some light on that. I'd be very interested to know. But that's been my perspective as a developer, is these unsolicited emails and calls from recruiters.
Scott, explain to us from the recruiter side how this happens.
Well, I mean, the Brandon, is your and I'll just ask you this: is your resume, if I were to go out and Google your name, could I find your resume?
You absolutely could.
Then that's exactly where, if you wanted all of that to stop, and I understand that most developers will keep it on their blog or things like that. Some recruiters are trained, and I've received this training, and I don't use it that often. I use it when I'm looking for something extremely specific. You're sort of classified as a passive job seeker. If anybody has their resume listed online, it's automatically assumed that they might be interested in, you know, the perfect job. I think what may be happening with you is that you're being contacted just sort of what I call willy-nilly, just based on a few random keywords that someone's looked up, not knowing you from Adam, and they may be in Walla Walla, Washington, and you are in Maryland, when there's absolutely no consideration taken into effect that, you know, you may have family or that sort of thing. Recruiters are trained to build these massive Boolean searches that can run on multiple different at the title of your resume, anywhere in the URL of your resume, et cetera, you know, that sort of thing. I think that's where it may be being found. There are the unsolicited calls, I assume would be could get rather brutal, especially if you're extremely talented developer and have a pretty deep background. I'm sure that Cal gets those same kind of calls as well. Even on my side as a recruiter, I get the same kind of calls from other recruiters trying to recruit me. So I understand your pain, understand where it's coming from. The fact that whoever's calling you is not, it's sort of looking at it from their own perspective and not from your perspective, that's the worst part. And I think that, like I said, to be able to stop those or be able to remove it altogether, and it's sad to say that that's probably the best way to make those stop.
Okay, but now, Scott, this isn't a we're going to beat up on Scott, although, you know, that would be an entertaining podcast. This isn't that isn't what we're here for. What do you do different? Because I know the answer to this question, but the people out there probably don't. What do you do different so that you don't run into these things?
I would rather establish some sort of relationship, and I'd like to think that the majority of my business, and I've been in Nashville for 10 years, the majority of my business is based on referral. I use my social networks deeply, and usually if I'm calling somebody out of the blue, I've got something, I've got someone to refer back to them, or someone referred me to them. There is a portion of my day that is spent on sort of blind calls or absolute cold calls, but those are people that have listed within the past 24 hours, usually on major job sites like Monster, Career Builder. So they're going to be expecting those calls. And it's funny because actually when I bring those people into my office and I can interview them and I know that they've gotten those calls, it's to say, I'm sure your phone's blowing up. How many phone calls are you getting? And, you know, it is laughable because when they're actually interviewing with me and their phone's ringing, I've said to them before, tell them you're meeting with another recruiter. We just all sort of laugh it off. But the vein that I go down is to ask somebody else, you know, if you could help me out, fill this position, or from a personal referral is always the best way.
Excellent. Brandon, thoughts?
Well, you know, if the recruiters who called me approach it the same way, you know, they knew somebody or they knew that I was looking or something along those lines, and they took the time to build a network, that would be a breath of fresh air. I don't think there's anybody in the world who wouldn't want someone on their side when they're looking for work. You know, because when you're looking for work, whether you're employed or not, it's definitely a stressful situation. You know, I've just come out of doing the exact same thing. You know, Scott, we talked about that at one point. And, you know, so it's always a stressful situation. The challenge that I've always had with recruiters is the perspective that they're not really on your side. The perspective that I've always had is that they're in it for the commission, they're in it for themselves. And, you know, as a job seeker, as a professional, it's hard to trust and rely on someone who appears to be solely in it so that they can make a buck off of you. And, you know, that to me as a developer has always been something that I've struggled with, and probably the thing I hate the most about the recruiting profession is that perception of I'm in this because I'm going to make some money by placing someone here. And I realize from the other side, Scott, that you have to make a living, and I respect that. But it's that perception that making the living is more important than the person you're helping that to me is the challenge as a developer who's talking with recruiters or being called by recruiters.
And unfortunately, and I agree, unfortunately, that's the way it is with some of the younger recruiters that I've seen come through. That's the way it's sort of instilled, is that, you know, the number of asses that you put in the seat determines the amount that you get paid. So when you only consider a candidate ahead that you can place, I think that's where you run into the issues that you're running into. Interview, you know, the best question that you can ask any recruiter is how long have they been in the industry, number one, and number two, how long have they been with their current company? You can see people that have been in the industry for 10 years and they've worked for 10 different companies. That shows, to me, that shows no passion or no vested interest in the company they work for and what type of culture they support. Back to what you were saying earlier, just like you get the typical emails of, you know, dear candidate, here's a job description. I'd love to be able to show a screenshot of my junk email box where I get literally hundreds of emails per day that say, dear recruiter, can you help fill this position? Just like you, that goes straight to the delete. I mean, that's, I can't get to the X to delete those fast enough. So we're getting hit in the same way. But I do agree with some of your points, but I think that that's just how a different vein to go down. Interview them just like they're interviewing you.
Okay. I do have a question from the audience. Actually, it's more of a comment, but I'm going to throw it out and let y'all discuss. Sean Farrell. Hi, Sean. Good to see you here. Sean Farrell said, I'm wondering if locality has something to do with the amount of contacts that Brandon is getting. Lots of jobs in Metro DC and contracting firms need warm butts in the seats to make money. So let me throw that out.
I think locality has definitely something to do with it, and Sean makes a good point. The DC market for programmers is hot, and the PHP market is hot as well. I've seen that in the posts that come across the DC PHP list. I've seen that in the companies. If you go to DC PHP, the group, and you ask, you know, who here is hiring, you know, almost every hand in the room is raised. So I do think that locality has something to do with it. But at the same time, it's a little telling to me that both recruiters and contracting firms would rather fill the seat than fill the seat with the right person for the job. Because I say that because I'm getting hit with people who are asking me if I want a .NET job or a Java job or a database administrator job. I think I got a project. I have a Ruby job in my trash from Robert Half Technologies here. That, you know, that they're asking me, you'd be interested in this, or you know anybody who'd be interested in this, and I think that the,
Brandon, do you blacklist those people that do that though, when you know that they're just, you know, knowing that you're a PHP developer, if someone sends you,
I'm looking through my automated trash. Yes, this ended up in the trash folder. I'm just looking through it to see what's in there.
And that's good. I mean, that way at least you know to filter those out.
Yes.
I mean, at least, you know, I mean, to keep them from coming back.
I don't know that it keeps them from coming back. It just they just go to my trash. They think they're getting through, and they're just being right. You know, they just don't get a response. But
sorry to interrupt, but Cal, answer that question. There was a statistic that came out yesterday. It actually came out this morning that said the number of jobs being posted in the San Francisco Bay Area has met and will surpass this week the number of jobs that were posted pre-dot-com. So the number of jobs that are in every metropolitan area are going through the roof. Even in Nashville, since October of last year, I've seen more positions become available in the last few months than I'd seen probably in 18 to 24 months. And that's a telltale sign all the way across the country. And then you're going to have those wet behind the ears, can't find my ass with both hands, you know, kind of recruiters. They're going to be sort of slinging and spaghetti at the wall. That if the candidate will stick, then great. That's then I can make my money and make my fee. And that's sad.
Yes, I agree. Sean, thank you for that question. And an interesting observation, my partner Keith Casey is on the line also, and he posted just a comment to me. He says, you've said that, you know, the jobs are blowing up, but he says Austin is actually relatively quiet, and he's actively trying to get recruiters more involved in all of the tech communities because the community obviously needs a pipeline of jobs and activity to keep things moving. Scott, I know you do an awful lot with a lot of the programming communities here in town. You host the Flash, and you're every time I turn around, you're at a meeting. I'm seeing you tweeting that you're at this right. meeting, you're at that meeting.
Travis tomorrow night, be there.
But you know, do you agree with Keith that the community needs the recruiters as much as the recruiters need their contacts in the community?
I think. I'll agree with that. I think it depends on the level of clients that are in that metropolitan area, specifically to Austin. There are huge clients there. Some of those clients only work on a vendor-related process, on a vendor management-related system. Those systems, to me, are a blessing and a curse. Of course, they keep the riffraff out, but they hurt the relationship as a whole between client and consulting firm to be able to establish that relationship, to be able to learn actually what the client wants. Some companies, some of the smaller recruiting companies, and for those of you who don't know, there are fees that are associated with that. So if I wanted to be on Google's vendor process, I would have to pay a fee in addition to even receive alerts about those positions. In addition to be able to place some of those, it takes a certain cut out of my, you know, any funds that are paid towards our company, it takes money away from that. Some companies choose just not to be a part of that, and will choose to work with those smaller companies. So sometimes they're not seen. But you know, I do agree that they are. You know, obviously they're a vital part, as you know, as vital as the developers themselves.
Okay, and I do have to correct one thing. Keith pointed out that he actually said the community needs the pipeline of jobs, not necessarily recruiters. But, Brandon, since we're talking about this, Brandon, you're very active in the PHP community, so I'll ask you, do you feel that the community benefits from recruiters participating in the community?
I feel that the community benefits from knowing what jobs are out there, and I do think that recruiters, when they post jobs to the mailing list, do fulfill that function in some way. For example, we've debated many times on the DCPHP mailing list whether or not recruiters should be allowed to post jobs because of the issues we've all experienced with them, and time again people come back and say, yes, we want to know what jobs are out there. Even if I would never email the recruiter and say, hey, I'd like to put my hat in that ring, it's nice to know on a regular basis that there are jobs being advertised. Oftentimes, the recruiter will post a salary associated with that job. I don't know how honest the salary is or not, but people do like to see that. And I think that it is beneficial to see that pipeline of jobs that's coming through. So, you know, it is beneficial to see those jobs, and I think that recruiters definitely fill that role because since they're looking for candidates, they're publishing those jobs. Whether or not working with the recruiter on getting that job is the best approach, I'm a little more iffy on that. But I do see Keith's point, and I think it's a point well taken, and I appreciate him for bringing it up most definitely.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. Scott, I'm going to throw this one out to you, and then Brandon, I'll give you a chance to comment. Is it okay for a recruiter to modify a candidate's resume? Now, I'm not talking stripping off the name and address and putting it in their format. I'm talking tailoring the resume to what obviously the client is looking for. Is this ever okay?
Absolutely not. No, it's the candidate's job to go in and secure, you know, and what I am as a recruiter is specifically a vehicle, and how I operate is we actually develop a profile of each candidate I meet personally, and then present a quick snapshot of each candidate to the client. Resume included, skill sets, skill summaries, evaluations, all of that. The only time that, and I've had Cal, and I'm sure you've seen this, Brandon, I'm sure you've seen it too. I've seen developers with 5 and 6 different resumes. Because sometimes a developer wants to be, for a particular project, a business analyst or a data analyst or a database developer or a web developer. Granted, they're equally skilled in both. If I know that they're skilled as, say, a web developer skilled as a database analyst and there's a database analyst position that's open, I would suggest to that candidate that they need to gear their resume more towards the job description. Don't make up anything, because if you get in there and fall on your face, you'll look like an idiot. But to gear their resume with their experience toward a particular job description. If you as a developer have found out that a recruiter has added a skill set to your resume or deleted something that you consider extremely important, I would fire them and never work with them again. I think that is one of the biggest taboos in the industry, and I am adamantly opposed to that. So, no, it's never okay.
Brandon, your thoughts?
Oh, well, I would agree with Scott on that, with a certain understanding that what I'm talking about in my blog post of rewriting a candidate's resume is to take that resume and to change it and then just send it off to the client or the person without ever showing it to the developer. Now I've obviously seen lots of horribly written resumes, and I've always appreciated someone pointing out something about my resume that could be improved, and I've taken advantage of those, and to me that would be something that if a recruiter who sees lots and lots of resumes and understands trends says, hey, you know, there's something here that isn't quite right, you might think about changing it. I would honestly take that as a good thing, but the issue that I have is when the resume is changed in such a way that it no longer resembles the original, or even at worst, it has components that weren't there, and that to me is the problem. My example here, I was applying for a job, and when I went in, they basically took my resume and took it apart, trying to pack buzzwords and keywords into it, and they didn't sit well with me, especially since apparently they sent the resume off to the client without me ever seeing it, and I severed my relationship with them very, very quickly. So, but I think that what Scott is getting at is a good point and is well taken, but no, it's not okay for someone to change a candidate's resume, especially if the candidate does not see the change that was made before the resume goes out to the client.
Hey, and Cal, just to add to that, I mean, there are, and I wrote an entry a while back that says never pay for a resume service, and mm-hmm. In all the years that I've been looking at this, I mean, there is no standard resume. It's everybody has their own format. Everybody, I mean, it's, I laugh at some of them. I just tell people the things that you don't do. Don't use stupid fonts. Don't use colored paper. Don't, for goodness sakes, don't put your face, don't put your picture on a resume, because that's something, it'd be like, you know, me putting mine on mine. Everybody would just laugh at it, but. People ask me all the time, say, would you mind, even that are not in technology, would you mind looking at my resume and sort of, you know, scratching it up with a red pen, let me know what I'm doing right or wrong. Everybody sees a different resume in a different way, and it's just everybody's opinion at the end of the day. Brandon, that's horrible that they completely redid your resume and sent it to a client without your knowledge or knowledge of the changes. In some cases, if a candidate goes to an interview for us, I'll actually give them a copy of the resume that we sent to the client. That way that they're not sitting, A, in the interview with you know, just their hands folded up in the middle. They actually have something to refer to when the client asks the question. The only thing that I'll add to a resume is our logo and remove contact information just for obvious reasons.
Okay, I have to admit, and this is usually, this podcast is not about me, but I'm going to interject something here. I have to admit, Scott, that I have violated at least two of your resume rules. First, at one point, I had five resumes out there for five different types of jobs, thinking, you know, this was great for SEO. Didn't work, but, you know, I actually did that. And second, I am embarrassed to say I went and actually had professional headshots made one time and created a, you know, like a head sheet, like actor's handout. And it had my picture on one side and the back side had a one-page version of my resume. And that one didn't get me a single job either, but it did give me some weird looks. So,
well, you know what, though? I mean, it's funny because I think that with Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and all of that, your face is going to be out there enough. I think that the putting your headshot on a resume, you know, 10 years ago, absolutely acceptable. That way, me as a recruiter could tell if the person was professional in appearance, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many additional ways to be able to tell if someone's professional in their, you know, a professional, you know, online as well as at work because of the advent of social media.
Yeah, this was all predating social media, and I was actually walking around a job fair at Sumé Center or Bridgestone or whatever it is this week and handing out headshots, you know, with my resume on the back. And it was just some of the looks were priceless, but none of the offers had, you know, I didn't get any offers of it. So, you know, as much as I tried to stand out, and that was the only reason I was trying to do it, was to stand out in the crowd. As much as I tried to stand out, it did me no good.
Right.
So you can stand out for the wrong reasons, Cal.
Yeah, that's true. And I've stood out for the wrong reasons a lot of times. Okay, no more questions so far from the audience. So let's go to the next one. Handling it when things go bad. Brandon, in your blog post, you talk about you know, ego stroking and playing Mr. Positive, you know, and all that until things stop. You know, and obviously when things stop, the recruiter has got the message from the client. Talk about that a little bit, and then let's let Scott talk about the other side of that. Okay?
Sure. I think this stems from what.
And Brandon, before you get started, man, you're pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm dude, I would be backing up because he's about to hammer you.
I don't know whether to take that compliment and just move on or tell Scott to go get screwed.
No, just move on. He's
say I'm unfriending him now. No, I think that this goes back to one of the themes of recruiters, and what I was talking about is that when you're just a commodity to a recruiter, when you're just a warm butt to put in the seat, when things start to go badly or the client decides, you know, this isn't the person we want, then of course there's no reason for them to call you back or to even have anything to do with you. Because if you're just a commodity to them, they'll find someone else. I think that there are likely professional recruiters out there who don't play the game that way, who genuinely are interested in the candidate as well as the client's needs, and don't do that. And Scott, I hope you're one, because, you know, I mean, it's just not a nice thing to do to someone. I think that that's really the problem, is that the recruiters who view them as heads or commodities rather than as people who have needs that they can help meet and in the process meet their own needs. So I think that is really what I was getting at in talking about that. What are your thoughts, Scott?
I had this question last week. I was on a panel at South by Southwest, and Brandon, I don't know if you saw it, but the title of the panel was called "Recruiters Are Full of Shit." And there were two developers and two recruiters, and I was one on the panel. It was moderated by William Hurley from Chaotic Moon Studios. Somebody asked this same question. It's never fun to be able to give bad news. And I think that younger, more inexperienced recruiters will tend to sugarcoat that or not give it at all. I think later on, obviously later on in my career, it's never easy to do it, but there's a better way. And for me to actually, you know, give a damn about your career, to be able to say, look, here's where you did really well in an interview, or here's where you blew it. But I'm setting that precedent on the front end during the interview, during your interview with me. I've set very fair expectation that once you do the interview, you'll get feedback from me as quickly as possible. I tend to be more aggressive than you in looking for a job now, or in trying to find you a position. Trying to keep your spirits up throughout the process. Nobody comes to see me because everything's great. You've lost your job. Your manager's a jerk. You're not getting paid what you want. You have to drive, you know, 2 hours from home. You're in a skill set that's you know, four versions old. So for me, it's I do my best to try to keep your spirits up, because I wouldn't want, you know, sad Sam going to interview with my client, because that's going to show through pretty quick. And developers, you guys know this, and I love you all the same. Sometimes personality and social skills come through very clearly on an interview, because you get nervous and that sort of thing. That's what makes me a recruiter, and you guys developers, you're much better at what you do than I do. But me being able to sort of give hints and pointers and things like that. But all recruiters should set fair expectation on the front end. I tell people, if you don't hear from me, it doesn't mean that I don't love you anymore. It just means that nothing has come up yet. I will tell people that I will continue to work with you and for you until you land somewhere. If you landed tomorrow at Joe's programming shop, call me, because the first thing I'm going to say is congratulations. The second thing is, give me your contact information just in case something happens. I've worked with the same people in Nashville year after year after year after year, and I've seen people grow in their profession. But if the expectation is not set forth on the front, everybody gets disappointed. And like I said, too, about bad news, nobody likes to give bad news, but it has to be done. That way you, the developer, can grow as a professional, so you know what you're doing, either right or wrong.
Again, my partner Keith, who is using the back channel because obviously he doesn't feel he can get his questions in on the regular question panel, he says he's had the experience that sometimes even after the opportunity is dead, he's had recruiters keep stringing him along because they didn't want to lose the connection. Scott, I'm asking you directly, how does a developer tell when the opportunity they were originally pitched is dead?
Ask. I mean, that's the easiest way. Is this position still available? Have they hired someone else? Are you still considering me for this position? And if they don't know, I mean, I've heard this before. They say, well, we just haven't heard back from the client. Use good common sense. I mean, if they've told you that and you've interviewed 2 weeks ago, I would automatically assume that position's dead. And I look at it sort of like if you're dating. And you've gone out on a date with a guy or a girl, and you haven't heard back in a couple of weeks, you're probably not going to get a second date.
Great advice and good analogy. Okay, since we have no more questions from the audience, let's go to actually, this is perfect timing because we're right at 40 minutes, and I really wanted to go no more than 50 minutes. So we're at the point where we've got closing comments, and I've told each of them that they each get 2 minutes, like in the opening, to say something. So I'm going to let Brandon go first, and then Scott will give you the last word. So Brandon?
Well, again, and thank you, Cal and Scott. You know, it's interesting to see this from your perspective as well as the perspective of a developer. And it's hard, you know, it's hard writing that blog post to try and see it from the other side. So I'm glad that we've had this conversation, because it has certainly answered some questions, and I do appreciate it from both of you for facilitating this. I think that the challenge for developers is still always going to be finding good recruiters in the thicket of junior or poorly performing recruiters who see them as commodities and see them as a ticket to a good commission, but don't really see them as people. And I think that the challenge for developers is consistently going to be separating those out, and separating the wheat from the chaff. And I think that it's most definitely important for developers to understand the role of recruiters. I think that if there's anything that we've come to an understanding on tonight, it's that there are some very good recruiters who treat people with respect and actually have an interest in seeing people be successful. And I feel as though that it's important that developers understand that and understand how to make use of that. I don't have much more to say beyond that. So I'll turn it over to you, Scott.
Scott?
Sorry, I clicked the mute button. Cal again, and Cal and Brandon, thanks. thanks for the opportunity to do this. And this unfortunately is a very common conversation that I have with a lot of people, even from people that I've hired later or people that are looking that have had really, really bad experiences with recruiters that are not taking the entire person into consideration. And I've always told people, and my background is in psychology, and I was very, very fortunate to have that education at school to be able to learn what empathy was, and to sit down and having been in a job search, to understand what it feels like to sit on the other side of the table. And I don't think that's until you can learn that as a recruiter, it's going to be very difficult to do your job. But I look at, and I was having a discussion with my wife, and I've had this before with some other people. I look at every person that comes into my office as, what if it were me? I'm if it were me the night before, I'm probably talking to my spouse about, am I nervous for this interview tomorrow? Or, I'm ironing my pants, getting ready, making sure that I've got the right tie that goes with the right shirt, et cetera, et cetera. It's a nerve-wracking experience. It's very stressful. And I take into consideration that the person sitting across from the table from me has a family, or they've got a car note or a mortgage that they have to pay. And if that were me, there are certain questions and certain expectations that I have, and I try to meet those with every person that I sit down and talk with, and take all of those factors into consideration. The second thing is, I've got some of my strongest friendships are with developers. So being able to sit down with that crew and say, look, tell me, is there something that I'm missing? For us to be able to sit down over a beer and have some banter and make jokes and, them call me pimps and I call them nerds. It's kind of fun for me, but it enables me to learn a lot more. And I would encourage all developers that all recruiters aren't bad people. I mean, if you find it, I've always told people to find a couple that you really trust, and or find one that you really trust that you can ask a question to, or bounce ideas off of, or have them look at your resume, versus just sort of putting your bait in the water and allowing 50 people to jump all over it. Establish those relationships and maintain those relationships over time, and I promise you, your outcome is going to be a lot better.
Excellent. I'd like to add one final closing thought. Matthew Wallace, bright guy here in Nashville, who runs the 615 Flash Group, which Scott, I believe, Vaco hosts. And speaking as a general technology community person, I just want to say thank you for what you guys do. But Matthew says, more of a comment, but he says, the best way to stop the noise of recruiters calling developers and contacting you is to form relationships with a couple of recruiters and then take your resume down. And you know, when he posted that earlier or in the evening, and I started to think, you know, I'm just not sure that's wise advice. But I hear things like that, I always go back to the great salesman Harvey McKay. And Harvey wrote an entire book titled Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty. And that's basically what Matthew's saying. Don't wait until you're out of a job to go find the good recruiter in town. Go find them now, you know, and build that relationship. And then when you need them, you don't have to be worrying about, am I dealing with the best recruiter? Because you could have vetted two or three before you found one that works with you. So that having been said, Brandon, you're one of the stars in the PHP community, dude. I appreciate everything that you do, and thank you for being with us here tonight. Scott, you know, yet again, bud, I'm in your debt because I know you had other things you could be doing tonight, and I appreciate you taking the time to spend an hour with us. Thank you to both of you.
Anything I can do to help.
Well, I appreciate both of you, and thank you for everything that you do for the PHP community. And, Scott, thank you for everything you do for technology communities at large.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Voices of the Elephant. This podcast is copyright 2011 EICC Incorporated, and all rights are reserved. For more information on the podcast and to nominate someone to be interviewed, visit the website voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT. DayCamp for Developers is a one-day technology-agnostic online training camp for web developers. We cover the topics that you won't find at any other conference at a price that every developer can afford. Visit our website today. DayCamp4developers.com and reserve your seat for the next class. As a listener of Voices of the Elephant, use the discount code VOTE to save $10 off your ticket. DayCamp for Developers. Invest a day in your career.